Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
And let's bring in one of the best of the business, no question. That's Josh Getzoff. Josh, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Great to be with you, Steve. Thanks for having me on again.
Well, Josh, obviously, I mean, these are tough conversations the Penguins are going to have. They have a lot of tough decisions to make. It's amazing how they've all come at once, but maybe we've been spoiled for over a decade because they didn't have to make those decisions. So how do you look at now what may have been the last dance for this group?
Yeah, it's. I think it's starting to really register with a lot of people that were close with the team and around the team on a daily basis. Because I can honestly say, Steve, that being around this team every day and, you know, traveling with them again this year and just being on the inside, it wasn't something that was ever brought up. It wasn't something that was ever kind of acknowledged. And as a result, not that you didn't know that it was, you know, a possibility, but you weren't really thinking to yourself, oh, man, this could be the last game or this could be the last series or this could be the last shift or anything like that until after it all ended. At least for me. And then it was kind of the flight back from New York. I was sitting there and kind of like, wow, I mean, this could be a pretty significant, and that's kind of underselling it, moment in Penguins history as far as what the fallout could be from this. And as you mentioned, an organization and a core that's been together for so long looks like its days are numbered as far as everyone staying together on the whole going into next season.
And it was worth having the core together because they won multiple Stanley Cups. So,
oh, yeah.
I mean, that's really what it does come down to. All right. When you look at the Rangers series, you're playing with the third string goalie for the most part. You're without still one of the top five players in the game for a game and a half. You know, the NHL, of course, has been, like all other leagues, been trying to do a better job of dealing with blows to the head. Is the NHL doing well enough with that? I mean, because it's a little more difficult because you have a stick involved, and sometimes it flails in a different direction. But are they doing a good enough job with it?
I would like to see a little bit more, and this is, I think, what anyone would tell you when asked that question. I would like to see more consistency one way or the other. I don't think they're consistent at all with their calls. So in that sense, you know, if you're trying to establish a line and trying to establish where people can go in hits and what the, you know, the retribution will be from the league and all that kind of stuff, I don't think anyone really knows from one ruling to the next what to expect. I mean, obviously, you know, we have the benefit of seeing these plays in super slow-mo, analyzing it frame by frame. Right. I don't necessarily always fault the officials on the ice because I think a lot of people fail to realize that that game moves really fast down there, and there are times that they're going to miss things. It's just human nature. But we've allowed this replay component, and we've allowed the ability to review and reflect and, you know, come down with a ruling as a result of those things. And sometimes I think it leaves a lot to be desired, or in the case of this series, left everything to be desired from the sense of Trouba and, you know, where a ruling could have possibly came down. Now, in the same breath as I'm saying that, that's not why the Penguins lost the series.
Right.
And anyone who looks at that and blames that, to me, wasn't watching the series. They're watching a moment. Because the Penguins three times had leads in those three clinching games, 2-0 at the Garden, 2-0 at home, 2-1 in Game 7, 3-2 in the third in Game 7, and they blew every single one. So if you're looking for a reason, it's their ability not to hold a lead and their ability not to close. It's not because Sidney Crosby got hit up high.
Yeah, and I think you knew the context of the question. It was just a big picture question on my part, more than anything else. I give Tristan Jarry, by the way, a lot of credit for coming back and playing Game 7 because I thought, despite that long layoff and everything he's been through, I thought he played really well in Game 7.
I thought he was great. You've seen all the pictures on social media that have come out since the game ended of the ice pack on the foot and everything like that. And I think everyone kind of had an inclination, okay, maybe he's going to play in this game. I still was, you know, kind of crossing my fingers up until the warm-up. You had an idea that it was going to be Tristan if you followed kind of how things have gone, you know, just in general with hockey. He was the first goalie off the ice at the morning skate, and he had been doing all this extra work. But Mike Sullivan, it kind of unlike him, was pretty coy before that game. It was actually kind of funny. The pregame availability, he was asked if he would name a starting goaltender tonight, which he's done every single one of the 82 games this season and all the playoff games. And he said, no, I will not.
Right.
So he kind of left there to be a little bit of mystery as far as that was concerned. But when Tristan Jarry came out of the visitor's entrance at MSG, I think everyone was kind of like, all right, I mean, this is what you'd hope for. Your season's on the line, and the guy you want to be in goal is in goal. Because I think, you know, a couple of beat writers that I am friendly with made a really good point after game six that you knew what you were going to get from Louis Domingue in a game seven. Mm-hmm. You kind of knew what you were feeling, but you didn't really know what Tristan Jarry was going to give you. And if that was going to give you a little bit of hope internally because of that, then I think that you roll with it. And I agree with you. I thought Tristan was really good. I thought he battled. I thought he made some really big saves. And, you know, the way that the game ends is unfortunate, but overall, you're not faulting Tristan Jarry for that game, because he was a big reason why they were able to, you know, be in it for parts of it. I thought the Penguins played very well in that game as a team, but Tristan was good too.
Sometimes being a general manager, there has to be that cold heart part that comes into play where you make decisions. And Josh, I've been recycling an old Bill Walsh quote, and Randy Cross was being interviewed by somebody, and he said, look, Walsh looked at him and he said, look, I think you have five more years left in the league, but I only want you for your two really good ones.
It's a great quote.
Okay. Chris Letang is coming off a season where I thought he was really good in all three phases, even strength, power play, shorthanded, really good. But, I mean, Josh, do we have any idea at age 35 how many good years he has in him?
No, that's the problem. And I will say this about Chris Letang. I agree with you. I thought he was unbelievable this season. He limited his own, you know, internal mistakes that he seems to, you know, become a part of his game as far as the turnovers and the mental miscues. I thought they were really down this year, which, you know, not coincidentally lined up with him having an unbelievable season and a career year from a points perspective. But I think, you know, when it comes to Chris Letang, if there's anyone you were looking at out of the three that are the big name UFAs for the Penguins, and Malkin, Letang, and Rust,
yeah,
he's actually the guy that I think is the most important for the Penguins, not just because of how he played this year, but the way he takes care of his body and the way he trains.
Yeah.
He says he wants to play five more years. I could see it happening. Is he going to be playing 27 minutes a night 5 years from now? I hope not, for whatever team he's playing on. But could he still be, you know, playing 23, 22, and be almost 40 years old? I could see it. He really does take care of himself, and he's you know, played really well the last year plus, I think, under Todd Reirden again there in Pittsburgh. With him back on the Penguins staff, has helped him kind of rein it all back in. And, you know, I don't know. To answer your question, I don't know if the guy is 5 years from now worth that kind of a long-term investment.
Right.
But I can tell you, if I'm looking at those three guys, he's the one to me that they have to figure out a way to keep. And you know, not coincidentally, he's going to be the most expensive of the three.
Right. Yeah. No, he will be.
Oh, yeah.
All right. 5 years ago, I could have given you a pretty good read on how the Fenway Group would handle things right now. All right. You know, because, and you know, Josh, I grew up as a Red Sox fan, so I've seen what they've done with the Red Sox.
Right.
And you've seen what they've done with Liverpool. And then they wouldn't re-sign Mookie Betts. They traded him. And I sat back and went, okay, now I can't predict what they're going to do. So a lot of this is going to fall to Ron Hextall. Is he, you know, in your time knowing him, is he one of those guys that, you know, where the heck with sentimentality, this is what I think we got to do, and I'm just going to do it? Is he one of those guys?
Ron is a little bit of a tough guy to get a read on. He just keeps, you know, the thing we heard about him, Steve, when he was hired, is that he keeps a lot of stuff close to the vest and he doesn't expand a whole lot. I've been able to do our GM show with him here in Pittsburgh, so I feel like I've gotten to know him on a little bit more of a personal level. But as far as that kind of thought process, he still keeps that kind of glued to himself and doesn't really reveal a whole lot as far as his plans are concerned. Now, I think that when Ron Hextall was hired, and granted it was hired by a different ownership group,
yeah,
I think that the message delivered to him was, we know that, you know, as soon as these big three of Crosby, Malkin, and Letang, as soon as their contracts run out, as soon as they kind of get towards the, you know, the next 2-3 years from now, that we might be in some, you know, tough years as far as our organization and finding a winning culture again. So we need to maximize what we have right now. I think Ron Hextall still looks at it as, okay, Sidney Crosby just had another amazing year,
yes,
one of his more consistent years.
Yep.
You probably are not going to bring back all of those guys,
yeah,
but you got some money to work with. They'll have just north of $29 million in cap space. Now, mm-hmm, that's, you know, something that you hear and sounds like a lot, but then you realize you have like 7 UFAs and a backup goalie you need to sign and all those things, and mm-hmm, it could be eaten up pretty quickly. But there are some names out there this summer that I'm sure will interest the Penguins if they do want to, you know, keep that quote-unquote window open and maximize what they have around Sidney Crosby. So I think Ron Hextall will be active. I think Fenway will give him a green light to make some moves and try to best this team as you know, get this team better, I should say, as best he can. And, you know, one thing I will say about Ron Hextall is that the sample size is still relatively small here in Pittsburgh, but every guy he brought in this offseason was a factor.
I agree.
Brock McGinn to Dan Heinen to Brian Boyle, mm-hmm, brought back Evan Rodriguez.
Yep.
You know, all those guys had good years. So if you're looking for what has he done, I think he's done some pretty good work, and it'll be interesting to see how he handles this offseason because it's really the first one that he's had with some cap space,
yeah,
and with the authority to make the decisions.
Good points, because I think he has a good eye for talent. I really do.
Yeah, no question.
And not only just a good eye for talent, but you also have to have a good eye for how it mixes. Right? It's not just the talent. It's, you know, do I think I can mix these guys? And, you know, and of course he's got Mike to do that. But all right. Josh, what a pleasure. Great to have you on. Let's not make you a stranger in the offseason, okay?
Anytime, Steve. I always look forward to our chats. So thanks again for having me on, and enjoy your summer. And if you're going over to that Penn State baseball game today, say hi to Dan Hartlib for me. I used to cover him at Illinois.
Oh, good.
Great guy, the manager of the Illini.
I will, as a matter of fact. That's great. I will do that. Thanks so much, Josh.
All right, take care. See you later.